And so here we are. We are meeting again today, and I'm so glad that we are. Whether you're part of the First Wesleyan family or you've connected with us in various ways, we love that we are together. I love this idea that we can be connected even when we're not in this room. You have to understand that the Spirit of God, the presence of God is bigger than our space. And as Bradley said today, that we pray that your place, wherever you are, turns into a place of worship. And so once again, whether you are part of First Wesleyan or you've connected with us, I would just say we're going to be back together someday. Hopefully sooner than later, but I hope that we can all come back together. Maybe if you've connected with us, we will get to meet you in person, and I just look forward to that day. And so I think we've had a great morning so far, and my prayer is that what I'm about to bring today meets you where you are. Now, I want to tell you something. This is not the first message I've written this week. Actually, this is the second message I've written because it was Wednesday night at about 11:30. Now, I was about to go to sleep, and all of a sudden something happened. I don't know what you would call it. It could be a check in the spirit. It was me wrestling with something. Maybe it's just something I ate. I don't know. I hope it's not that. But all of a sudden, I started feeling, Scott, the message that you have is good. It's okay, but it's not right. The message you prepared is for a time, but not this time. And so I had to own that moment and say, okay, God, if that's what you want, then speak to me what you'd have for today. And so what I'm hoping is kind of my obedience unlocks and connects with you exactly where you are today. So this is what I want you to do. Will you get a Bible? And I want you to go to Matthew chapter 21. If you don't have a physical Bible, then I want you to go to your phone or whatever and just click on Matthew chapter 21 because I've got some homework for you this week. All right? For kids, you're out of school and maybe you're starting to get some schoolwork. I've got some schoolwork. But you adults, this is your time to get some homework. I'm going to ask you this week, will you read Matthew chapter 21 through Matthew chapter 27? Okay, Matthew chapter 21 through Matthew chapter 27, because this is a big week. This is a really big week in the Christian world. We call this week either Holy Week or Passion Week. You may call it one or another, but this is a big week. We are walking into the final days of Jesus before his death and resurrection. Today, Palm Sunday, begins this storyline where Jesus goes through a sequence of events that we always remember this time of year. And it gives us a picture of Jesus that we need to have. And so what's going to happen is I'm going to walk us through these sequence of events. I'm not going to read Matthew chapter 1 through 27. That's going to be you. But what I want to do is I want to walk through these sequence of events because what you'll see is maybe Jesus had a roller coaster kind of week. You know what I mean? Like, he had a week that a lot of us would look at and say, wow, that was a lot. And maybe by the end of it is you'll be like, oh, I know why Scott wants me to read this. So can we go to chapter 21? And what we see here as we walk in this story is what we call the triumphant entry. We have Jesus walking in. Maybe you know this part. And Jesus walks in or rides in on a donkey into Jerusalem, a city that he loved. And we have people grabbing palm branches and they're waving them and throwing down their coats and symbolizing how much he is loved. Can I tell you, in this part of Jesus' story, he couldn't have been more celebrated than right then. Jesus was on top of the world, it felt in that moment. Jesus mattered more than ever. Things were coming together. He's got these people who are all about him. Can you imagine what Jesus felt in that moment? He's walking through, riding through the town, and the people are recognizing his greatness. They're recognizing he is what they've been waiting for. But the story continues, and if you read on, you'll see another scene where Jesus is in the temple. and his passions are overtaking him. His, I would say, a righteous anger just swells up and begins to overflow, and he begins to flip tables in the temple. It's almost like Jesus can't help. He can't take it anymore. He's looking at them and seeing what they turned the temple into. Not a place of worship, but a place of manipulation and a place of greed and a place of selfishness. And he looks at it. And I think he's been seeing things, but at this point he is done. He is over it. He has come into the city, and now he is proclaiming some things, and he is making a point. Not in my Father's house. Not this way. So that scene kind of comes to an end, and what we see is Jesus now has entered or gone up to the Mount of Olives. I think he went up to the Mount of Olives because he had to recover a little bit from those intense moments. But also, the story is continuing. It's getting closer and closer to that climactic moment of the week, and he has to prepare himself. But what we see there is he's looking over the city, and in this moment, it describes this in other parts of the Gospels as well, that he is overseeing the city, and he begins to weep, he begins to cry over the sin of that city, a city he loved, a city that he had come to save, a city that he had come to care so deeply about. But he looks over it, and there's so much wrong with it. There had been so much potential, a facade of putting God first and the glory of the Father, but look at what he's seen as he's ridden in and now flipped tables. He's on that mount looking over, and he's just pouring out his soul. Well, the story continues because now we're in the Last Supper. We're in that moment where he is with those final moments with the people that he has done life with the most. He's in these final moments of the people that he has learned to love, and he's tackled life with. He's faced opposition with, done miracles with. He has seen their families, and he has seen what they are like. They've learned each other. And here he is having a last meal. He's saying goodbyes. He's pouring out last wisdom nuggets to them. He's sharing with them his heart. He's washing their feet. He's giving them the last words that he has for the people that he loves, who he knows gonna have to carry on the message. He loves them, and he's saying goodbye. Well, they leave dinner and they go to the Garden of Gethsemane. The Garden of Gethsemane is between Jerusalem and the Mount of Olives. Jesus would have walked this journey many times and stopped and prayed and connected with his Father. And here he is again connecting because he needs it. The story has advanced. The story has continued. We're getting closer and closer to the climactic part of this story. And Jesus is beginning to feel the agony. Says throughout the Gospels that even blood is coming out of his pores in agony because it's so intense, the anguish that is there. And he leaves for a moment to go to those people that he had just spent that dinner with, the ones he loves the most. And what are they doing? They're sleeping. Can you imagine the feelings of Jesus where he's like, I'm going through some of those anguish-filled moments of my life and you're sleeping? Do you feel like he might have been experiencing isolation? Do you think he might have looked at them and said, how do you not walk through this with me? And so he leaves and goes back and prays more, and he's submitting his will to the Father. He comes back to his friends and they're sleeping again. Isolation, alone, who is with me? Well, that moment ends. And what we see is the government, the military, the guards, they come and meet them. They found out where Jesus has been. Earlier, he had been teaching in the temple, and the people were eating it up, but they started this movement of trapping him. Well, now they have him. Now they have him. Why? Because one of the people closest to him has betrayed him. They've betrayed him. They've sold him for just a little bit of money, the price of what a slave would have been sold for. That Jesus has been sold like it's not that much. It says something about how Judas felt about Jesus, the one that Jesus had said, "You're part of my team, you're part of my family," and now you're rejecting him. Can you imagine the feeling of that rejection? Well, with him being arrested, they pull him away and a trial begins and he's presented before the people. And what happens here? Maybe the people will bail him out. Those people maybe that were celebrating, maybe people who were watching and seeing and they'd experienced some of the healings, they'd heard the stories, but here they are and he's put in front of the people and they yell, "We want Barabbas." What? You want the thief? He's gone from being acclaimed to now being rejected. He's gone from being the hero to the villain. How does that happen? What does that feel like? Well, they take him. They do what the people have said, and they whip him, and they beat him, and they humiliate him, and they cause him to force him to drag his own cross through the town as people just, man, they just speak words of hate. And we get to this moment where he's on the cross and crucifixion is now his story. And every feeling, physical, emotional, suffering is what he has now to walk through. Suffering is his story. Pain, the weight of the burden. Hours, excruciating moments, to the last scene of Jesus being buried. The end. It's over. Is there no tomorrow? Completing. Birth to now death. This is the story of Jesus. This is the roller coaster week of all roller coaster weeks. And why do I tell you this sequence of events? Why do I walk through these highlight moments of the week? Well, I have a question for you. How have your last few weeks been? Have they been easy? Have they been unsettling? Have they been filled with fear, maybe a wide array of emotions? Have you ever felt yourself frustrated, angry, just over this? Have you expressed passion in various ways because of this is where you find your life right now? Have you had maybe good moments, peaceful moments? Maybe they've turned into moments of mourning. Maybe you felt moments of suffering or isolation. Have you felt lost or felt alone? What have you been feeling? Have you been rejected at work or by work or someone in your life? How have you been feeling the last couple weeks? This is why I tell you the week, Holy Week, Passion Week, is because maybe this week, 2020, Jesus can be more relatable to you than ever before. Maybe it's this week where you look at Jesus and you're like, I feel like I understand him more than I ever have, and maybe he understands me. Maybe it's in this week I'm like, Jesus, I relate to you, and I feel like you relate to me, because in the past, maybe we've admired and we've believed in him. But what I often think is there's a gap that can develop. There's a gap that the enemy tries to keep as wide as possible in our lives between us and the reality of Jesus. And what closes that gap is when we look at Jesus' life and say, wow, I have felt and experienced so many of the same things that he has felt and experienced. He has experienced so many of the things that I have felt and experienced. See, how many of those things would you say, yeah, Jesus, I've been there. You know, yeah, I've been hurt there. That's no fun there. And when we see this, here's my prayer. When we see this, this is what bonds us and drives us closer to Jesus than ever before. Maybe this year you go, wow, Jesus understands. Jesus understands because you think about the twists and turns that went on in his life. That's where I've been. But can I tell you this morning, it's not just that he's been through, that we have been through, and you can feel a connection. There's something even greater. It's not just that he went through, it's how he went through. How he chose to respond in these moments of his life, that's what even blows my mind even more. It's another level. See, this is what I see. Not only does he walk the same roads as us, he walks them in a healthy way. He walks them in a way where I can say, wow, I can learn from you, Jesus. I want those truths to be truth in my life. But what I see is Jesus saw beyond the hardship of just the moment. Jesus saw beyond the hardship of the moment. See, what we see is Jesus always sees the bigger picture. Look at the crucifixion. He's in pain. He's in agony. It's coming to an end, and he's carrying the weight of the world, literally. But what does he do? He speaks to the one beside him. The one beside him who wanted a future in him. One that's recognizing who Jesus was. So we've got agony, but over here is his real mission. And so he has this bigger perspective to speak a truth of hope into the one next to him. The moment didn't own him because he saw a bigger perspective. I want to see beyond the hardship of this moment. It's not only that I see in Jesus that he aligned his passions with the passions of the Father. This is really big. See, in order for Jesus to walk through all of that week in a healthy way, he had to submit his own passions and desires and spend time to align himself with God. See, this is why I think we see Jesus retreating to places alone so often, is he knew he needed to reconnect his heart to his Father's heart if he was going to walk this out, live this out the way his Father wanted him to. He had to align his passions with the Father's passions. See, he could walk through this in a healthy way because he saw something with a bigger perspective. He saw the moment in a bigger perspective, but then he aligned himself with what was bigger than him. I want to do that. I want to do that in my life. Life is bigger than me. It's more than I can control, more than I can handle some days. And I want to align myself with the passions of my Father so that I have His heart as I walk through life. And then the third thing I see, and this may change how you walk through every moment right now, is I see Jesus filtered His emotions through His faith, not His faith through His emotions. Let me say that again. Jesus filtered His emotions through His faith, not His faith through His emotions. See, if you read the life of Jesus, you will realize He had real emotions. He had real life ups and downs. We often feel like Jesus isn't relatable because we can't imagine He feels the ups and downs that we feel. But can you hear me? He felt everything. Jesus felt everything. See, the difference, though, is His faith was His guide through His emotions, not the other way around. We often let our emotions lead the way, and then we see what kind of faith we have on the other side. But I love how we see Jesus and how He shows me how to navigate through my emotions. Emotions that are real, emotions that are valid, emotions whether I'm having a great day or terrible day. Jesus had a deep faith that led Him through the emotions He was feeling so He could come out healthy on the other side. See, this is what I want to tell you. Jesus can be relatable because He has been where you've been. He has been where you are. And He has been where you will be going. He has been where you have been. He's been where you are, and He's been where you're going. This is why we can look at Jesus and we can read Hebrews chapter 4 and it'd be such a powerful verse, a truth for us today. Can I read Hebrews chapter 4 verses 4 through 16? It says there this, therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. Hold firmly to the faith we profess. We do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way just as we are, yet He did not sin. So here's the biggie right here. Let us approach God's throne with grace and with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Because God has been where Jesus has been where we've been and where we are and where we're going, we get to approach, hear me, we get to approach Him with confidence. Because we know on the other side of that, what He gives is grace and mercy. Always. He gives grace and mercy because He's been there. He gives grace and mercy because He loves you. He gives grace and mercy because He has walked the road you have walked, and so He will help us in our time of need. Jesus, you've been there, so I'm confident you'll be with me. I can relate to you because I know you can relate to me. And this is what I'll tell you that maybe can change something in you today. If we own this truth, if you can close that gap between you and God, because you realize Jesus has been there, this is how we can respond. We can say, Jesus, I will trust you completely. Jesus, I will follow you passionately. And Jesus, I will thank you daily. See, if we aren't careful, we can believe in Jesus, but not believe he understands my life in your life. We can allow there to be too much separation between us and Jesus, because he's Jesus, I'm me. But I believe Jesus wants to see us to see him in a more relatable way. I think he wants us to see him in a way that he understands. I think he wants us to embrace that human side of him that says, I felt it, I've walked it, I've experienced it. Anything that you're going to experience, I've been there. He wants us to see this week that he walked through that was so intense, from the great moments to death, from being on top to being on the bottom, below, just done. He's experienced all the array of emotions that you can experience in a week. And maybe life is more real to you than ever before. Maybe it's slowed down, and so you are thinking things and experiencing things and seeing things like you never have before, or not for a long time. But when we also stop and look at the life of Jesus, we can say, Jesus, I can trust you completely. Jesus, I want to follow you passionately. And Jesus, I'm going to thank you daily, because I'm thankful for a Savior that I can come to in confidence. And what I receive when I come to you is grace and mercy and someone who wants to help me. Maybe Passion Week, we see that you were Jesus' passion. Maybe this week you'll see the greatness of Jesus. And maybe you'll see a Savior that understands you. And because of that, you embrace him, experience him, love him, give yourself away to him completely. I hope that you saw the announcements this week that we want to take communion together this week. We want to take communion this week because of this thought that Jesus walked through all this, and we want to remember why he did it and who he did it for. Maybe because you felt distant, and in this moment, though, you're like, God, you're speaking to me. And maybe it's during communion that you want to profess to God, God, I want to trust you completely. Because I've been trusting myself a lot, and I'm letting myself down a lot. I'm trusting this world a lot, and this world is letting me down a lot. I want to trust you completely, and I can because I see what you did. Jesus, I want to follow you passionately, because honestly, there's been a gap. I believed in you, but my passion hasn't been you. Maybe today you want to be thankful, because no matter what has come your way, you've seen him there in your life. Something we did last week, I want to do again this week. And this all, like stuff I said, is new and the experiencing where you are right now. But I love the idea of community. And maybe today you want to profess something and just say, God, I want to trust you completely. And maybe you just put trust in that comment section. Help me trust you. Maybe you want to follow God passionately and you want to declare to all the people who are watching this, I want to follow you passionately. Help me follow you. You just want to put passion. And maybe today you're just like, God, I want to show how thankful I am. And you just put thankful. I know it may be weird a little bit, but there's something to the we're together in this. And you can see other people are experiencing what you're experiencing. Maybe as you see a name pop up, you can pray for somebody. But listen, the worship team is going to come up. And we're going to sing a final song. And I'm going to give you a moment as a family to take whatever you have. Don't worry what you have. Just have a little bread and a little juice. Whatever you have is perfect. In a moment during this worship song to end today, you're going to grab this bread and whoever you're with, if you're by yourself, with a family, with your spouse, I don't know who you're with, some friends, and you'll say, this body of Jesus was broken for me to forgive me. And I remember that today. And you take this juice. Take whatever you have. It can be water. It doesn't matter. You take it in remembrance. You say, your body poured out for me because you love me. Maybe today you have not experienced the greatness of Jesus and you haven't given yourself to him. And before you take communion, you say, God, I want to give my life to you. I know you died on the cross for me, and it's this week, 2020, that I want to give my life to you. And all that is a simple prayer of, God, forgive me for my sins. I believe you died on the cross for me. You rose again to give me life. And today, I give my life to you. If that's you today, I just want you to put me in the comments because I want to pray for you today. Just put me. God, forgive me for my sins. I give you my life. I believe you did this for me. So now I want to let you have a moment. The worship team is going to just close us in worship. But whenever you're ready, just take that bread, take that drink, and remember what Jesus did.